The goal of a good documentary is to bring light to an important issue or cause and galvanize people around said cause. And so it was for the docudrama Surviving R. Kelly. Let's chat about it on Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
I felt like my silence allowed it to continue.
I worked up the courage to come forward and tell my story.
A part of me always felt like maybe I did something for him to treat me that way.
I want my story to be heard so people could take this situation seriously.
But when I found out it wasn't just me,
I just don't want it to get any worse.
And it just kept going and going and going.
I just wanted to know that it's not, you know, you're not alone. They're not alone.
Joining me on this episode of Pop Life is Leslie Gray Streeter. She's a pop culture and entertainment columnist for the Palm Beach Post out of Palm Beach County, Florida. I wanted to chat about welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to chat about the persuasive power of documentaries and, in the case of the docuseries Surviving R. Kelly, why it's gotten a bit of traction where early news reporting on R. Kelly did not, and the current fallout that's sort of happening around the production of, or since the documentary has been produced. And just to rewind and reset some context, we're talking about 52-year-old R&B star R. Kelly, mostly known for the inspirational hit song, I Believe I Can Fly. His bona fides include 75 million records sold worldwide, 12 studio albums to his name, and is listed by Billboard magazine as the most successful R&B artist in history. In 2002, he was indicted on 21 counts of child pornography linked to a 27-minute sex tape that he allegedly recorded with an underage girl. And he was acquitted of those charges in 2008 when it was ruled that the girl's identification was inconclusive. We fast forward to more recent years where there was some attempt to, at the height of the Me Too movement, to relitigate the charges in the court of public opinion. We had the Mute R. Kelly, hashtag Mute R. Kelly movement that saw some advancement. We had, he had about 10 concerts canceled at the time. But he seemed to weather the storm. And then comes Surviving R. Kelly, which seems to have gotten a bit more traction. Did you watch this docuseries?
I have watched parts of it. I've watched enough of it as I could stomach. I know professionally I need to absorb it. It was so difficult to watch. And we'll talk about it later, I'm sure, about sort of like when people knew when and what they knew when. But there's been such a rumor in certain parts of the culture for years that this was happening. And watching these people who I believe had nothing to gain, from making things up, talking about these things, from his family to the victims, alleged victims, it was just a lot to handle. So I've watched much of it.
Yeah, it's not an uncommon story in parts of our culture. Where we have people who have been accused of seemingly horrible things, but they seem to have some Teflon coating to who they are, and he was no different. He skirted most of the consequences. There was no real legal consequence. There was no financial consequence. Relying on his catalog of music to continue to earn money, a steady stream of employees and legendary loyal fan base has sort of kept him out there in front of the public. And then along comes Dreamhampton. So Dreamhampton is the director and producer of Surviving R. Kelly, which aired on the Lifetime channel. This thing was popular. I mean, it was one of the most watched series that Lifetime or shows that Lifetime has ever produced. I believe it fell just short of about 2 million viewers. And so this thing got some serious traction, and I'm wondering if that's because when you have a situation like his case and you have just sort of a all these individual news reports, having witnesses and storytellers in one concentrated three-day airing of six hours of programming, if that had more of an impact? Or are we just at a more at a different time now where this stuff is people aren't being more patient with artists like this?
I think it's all of that. I think that the rumors that have come through for years have been here, there, even with his lawsuit, you know, with the accusations of which he was acquitted back in the early 2000s, you know, these are disparate enough that, I mean, he was still making music with, you know, such a popular artist as Lady Gaga years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, I mean, he has not gone anywhere, but these things have happened, both because of the climate with Me Too. And I think, as you mentioned, because to have all these things, like, compiled together, I hate to say it, we're in a culture where we like bites and sound bites and give us everything at the same time. And I think it's harder to ignore. It's harder to ignore when Lifetime's not CNN, but they're not, like, Bob in his basement either. So when Lifetime pulls together all of these people, including alleged victims, member of his family, Chance the Rapper, you know, all of these people, and puts them together in this context to tell the story, it's harder to ignore. And you can still deny it, as R. Kelly has continued to through his lawyer, or you can say maybe there's something here, because whether or not there is something or not, it's hard to deny at this point.
And because there were no real consequences, and by that I mean streaming services continued to play his music, radio stations continued to play his music, RCA kept him on the roster, Ticketmaster still promoted concerts. Because of all that, there were no consequences. He, even in light of the scare that he had when he was on trial for this, is still being accused of connecting with underage girls, or at least very young women, being accused of still holding people hostage in his home, and publicly in public interviews still bragging about the fact that he likes extremely young women. And that kind of bravado, I think, mixed with this great documentary storytelling, has landed him in some hotter water now.
I was going to say, he's a person who believed, much like Harvey Weinstein, that he was never going to get caught. With both of these people, there have been rumors and accusations for years and years and years, and for whatever reason, no one came forward. When people came forward, it was dismissed, and people were easy to dismiss. I think that R. Kelly got a lot of traction in proclaiming his innocence because he was acquitted.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, obviously I didn't do it, while continuing to do, allegedly, the things that he was accused of. So I think all of those things combined to make, as you said, a very bold person. Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, Aaliyah's song, was it 1996?
Mm-hmm.
95? I mean, these things were, he's not over the years shied away from the very, at least flirting with the idea that he's into the very things that he's accused of. And it's just out in the open. And I think, well, you know, how I feel, but I think that who the alleged victims are had a lot to do with people looking the other way.
And
because they were young black women.
Yeah.
And I think that it was easier to, the rumors that he was going to Chicago, specific Chicago school, to look for girls, that he picked up a young fan outside of his trial.
When I was out there on tour with him, he had a lot of guys that, you know, were pretty much, you know, if he say, go get some girls from the mall, they'll go get some girls.
You look at the people around somebody, and it's very upsetting that he really didn't have to do much to get these young girls.
Oh, we always go to the mall, too. We go to the mall in every city.
We're just chilling. We're going to go to the mall. Dave's going to try to keep it low-key. We'll see what happens.
These are people who I believe society does not always feel need to be protected, and whose sexuality is imposed on them at a very young age, and who are called from within the community things like fast tail girls, and those girls knew what he was, and blah, blah, blah. These things seek to take the sting out of the victimization of these women maybe even calling into question whether they are a victim.
What
if it happened?
What does that say about us as a society, and particularly a group of people within that society, about how we value our young women?
I think that, I don't know, you kind of go back biblically. I mean, you go back to the very beginning of time. There's always an understanding, this idea of the femme fatale of whatever age, this person who seduces, this person who's feminine wiles, blah, blah, blah. There's always been I don't know if it's that they want to let guys off the hook, or just easier that way, that the idea of someone breaking up someone's marriage when she's not the person in the marriage, mm-hmm. or the idea of someone, a 14-year-old, quote-unquote, seducing a dude who's in his 30s, it's not a thing. But society and misogyny and the way that our society works at large has always supported that narrative because it's easier, maybe because men are in control, or maybe it's because women are seen as disposable. And I think that when you sort of synthesize it down to the specific community that you're talking about, those women, sometimes socioeconomically, did not have as much of a voice. They are not seen to be protected legally as much as other people are, and they're just forgotten. And I guarantee you that if he had been outside of schools in suburban white neighborhoods, this would have been done in 2000.
Yeah.
Well, maybe 1998.
And it's not isolated to pop culture and R&B artists either. We need only look no further than politics and Roy Moore, and how accusations of relationships with young girls did not even sink. Didn't really sink his political career.
No. And it, once again, I don't know why it is that society is ill-equipped to protect the very people that they claim they're out to protect, are children, mm-hmm. when they are females. But it doesn't happen. And I guarantee you, you've had conversations with people about any, whether it's celebrity or some young woman you know, and the way that I don't know, people use the word husky anymore, but you know what I mean? There's all these words to describe this supposedly sexually adventurous and tantalizing young woman whose existence drives people crazy, and it's not their fault because it's her fault.
Yeah. And I think one of the keys to a successful documentary in its storytelling is to have some credible information and sources and resources in that documentary. And in the case of Surviving R. Kelly, we had some real credible voices. You had pop artists like John Legend and Chance the Rapper, who were going on record talking about how this is a problem in the industry. You had R. Kelly's brothers. You had the aunt of the young woman who is the subject of the sex video that he shot. I think those were very powerful voices to have in this documentary to help tell this story that I think finally got some traction in the Me Too movement.
I believe so, and I think Chance the Rapper and John Legend are huge, huge stars. You cannot accuse them of being someone who had a hit in 2005 in the air. This young woman whose niece was allegedly in the sex tape.
Yeah.
She has nothing to gain at this point because it's already caused problems in her family. Going on record, you know, his brothers I thought was very interesting because I don't know if they necessarily got the effect that they wanted. I mean, they spoke about he and they having been sexually abused by a relative, and that perhaps that's why not only he and they started to be sexually active at young ages, but perhaps that's why he has a penchant for younger women. And they didn't seem to think anything about, well, some people like older women, he likes younger women, what's the big deal? It's like, you're nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that having those complicated and painful stories told, they're his brothers. I mean, why would they? I don't know. I just, that moved me. I was very moved by that. Even like I said, that they're all trouble. It seems like a troubled family.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, that gave, I think, a lot of credence to, there's smoke here, certainly. I think there's a big raging fire.
Yeah. Yeah. And one other thing is that they could not get, or they reached out to artists like Lady Gaga, Celine Dion, Jay-Z, and others to participate in the docuseries, but they declined or didn't respond. But some, like Lady Gaga, have recently released statements suggesting that they have remorse of having performed with R. Kelly in the past.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a fan of Lady Gaga's. I believe that this happened to come right in the middle of her Golden Globe and Oscar campaigns for A Star is Born. I think that she had to respond. This has been years since she's done this. People have asked her not to do it, first of all. They asked her not to appear with them on stage. She's known about these allegations for years. And even after the documentary came out, she did not immediately comment. She commented and had her version of that song, Do What You Want With My Body, taken off streaming after this happened because she didn't want to lose some awards. And that's cynical to say, and I don't know that. Once again, I think that she's a really talented person. But it was disappointing that these people did not. If you were going to do it when your Oscar campaign was at stake, why didn't you do it if you were so moved to the minute this came out and you couldn't deny it anymore?
Yeah, I don't think that's being cynical at all. I think when you have high-powered publicists behind you, that's going to happen. They're going to manage. They're going to try to manage how people view you. They're going to manage your reputation, whether you want to or not. So I think it makes perfect sense. I think you make perfect sense that in the height of this Oscar campaign that there had to be something from her on this. Now, someone like Erykah Badu. Now, there's a spat between Erykah Badu and filmmaker Dream Hampton, at least via Twitter, in which Erykah Badu claims that she was never contacted by the producers and filmmakers to appear. But she's been blasted for having, say, at award shows or at least one award show that R. Kelly has done more for black people than anyone. And so there's this back and forth and I guess people wanting Erykah Badu to and now Erykah Badu, to her credit, says she doesn't know R. Kelly, that even when she introduced him on that award show, that she's never performed with him, never hung out with him, doesn't know him as a person. But is still sort of defending her comment or not feeling any regret for the comment she made.
Well, recently, I think this in the last week, she had a comment at a concert where she basically asked for prayers for him. This is blown up. And then she said, I was just saying, you know, prayers for him, whatever. And I'm not saying he's right or wrong. I'm just saying prayers. And then Taraji P. Henson.
What did Taraji do?
On her Instagram, said, I don't see any hashtag mute Harvey Weinstein. Which is, first of all, unnecessary because Harvey Weinstein is being criminally prosecuted. So he lost his job and his money and his ties, and they've taken him his Academy membership away from him. So what she's saying technically is not true. And it seems like a lot of whataboutism about, well, what about that person? What about that person? It's not appropriate. Just say you support the person or don't make up stuff and say, well, nobody ever tried to mute that person because he most certainly was muted. His name was taken off his company. Everything is gone.
Wow.
I mean, he's probably too rich.
Yeah.
But he's so rich. But besides that, everything is gone. He's presumed to be. He's the poster child for bad behavior at this point.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think the hallmark of a good documentary is to have some kind of impact. And this documentary, Surviving R. Kelly, seems to have had an impact. The Cook County, Illinois State's Attorney's Office has received numerous new complaints of abuse and have begun to investigate those claims as a result of this series. Lady Gaga, as we mentioned, released a statement that she regrets working with him. And major market radio stations have stopped playing his music. RCA Records has now dropped him from the roster. So That is the power of good documentary storytelling, and there now seems to be some traction behind holding this man accountable.
It does. And I'm going to say something that people will be mad at me, but it is what it is. I'm not the first person who said it. I'm afraid that Lifetime being a mainstream and not predominantly black network gave this traction as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because all these people saying BET, people, I mean, obviously owned by Viacom now, but BET has known about this for years. Other entities within the community have known this for years. Why did it take Lifetime to do this? And I mean, obviously, I don't work for Lifetime. I can't give you answers. But, you know, they've been doing some very smart stuff lately.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's very sensational, like the show You that's now that started there, the, like, dreamy serial killer show that's now on Netflix. Netflix picked up as well. They're trying to do a lot of rebranding and doing more than just, you know, the Cheerleader Who Stole My Husband movies.
Right.
You know? He married a bad man, starring Tori Spelling, you know? So they're doing a lot more than that, and the original programming is pretty impressive, and it's salacious, and there's a salacious aspect to this as well, but, you know, they did a really good job of it, and it's because it's out there now. It's out there, and they will probably be a place that other people go to and not a streaming service to do the next hot documentary because they've shown that they can handle it and they know how to market this and they know how to get the buzz going about it. So I think it was a very smart move for Lifetime.
Yeah, and one of the, I think, more impactful things that happened as a result of this, the National Sexual Assault Hotline experienced a 27% increase in calls during the airing of that series. So getting people to, tell their stories to get help, I think was very important. Is there anything in the docuseries that really stood out to you, that really connected with you?
And I'm going to sound like a bad feminist here, but it was the presence of John Legend. It's weird to say that the presence of a man stuck out to me, but it did because he's a man and he's a black man and he's a man who has everything to lose in terms of, you know, controversy and popularity. He's out there right now making music. You know, it's not like he's not like a person who last had a hit 15 years ago who's, you know, trying to find some traction. And I think that as a black woman who is seen, as I said before, what I perceive to be a lack of protection towards people like me, seeing a black man stand up and say, a powerful one, stand up and say, I don't like this, I acknowledge this, I stand with the victims, and this is not right, was very powerful to me because I think that that's been missing. So that was, you know, that was very powerful to me.
Outstanding. Well, I want to thank you for taking time to explore this docuseries with us again. It is Surviving R. Kelly. It was directed and produced by Dream Hampton, aired on Lifetime Channel. I don't know if they're re-airing it. I'm sure they probably will, but you can check listings, check the Lifetime website to find out when it will re-air if you are one of many or one of the few who happened to miss it. Leslie Gray Streeter, I want to thank you for taking time to chat with us.
Thank you.
And you can pick up on what Leslie Streeter is throwing down by checking out her column at the Palm Beach Post. You can visit palmbeachpost.com. That's going to do it for this episode of Pop Life. Be sure to listen to past shows whenever you want at waer.org and like the Facebook page at Pop Life WAER. Until next time, I'm Joe Lee.